And welcome to Next Reads, a podcast where we read the first chapter of a young adult or middle grade book to help you figure out what to read next. This podcast might contain language or situations some readers might find offensive or unsettling. The North Liberty Library does not necessarily endorse any author's views, but it does support the freedom of speech and the freedom to read. I'm your host, Kayla, the Youth and Teen Services Librarian at the North Liberty Library. My pronouns are she and her. Welcome, listeners. Today, I'm going to be reading from Song for a Whale by Lynn Kelly. She works as a sign language interpreter that's taken her everywhere from classrooms to hospitals to Alaskan cruises. Her first novel, the award-winning Chained, was named in 7 state reading lists and won the Crystal Kite Award. And her second novel, Song for a Whale, is a middle grade 2019 novel. And here's the summary. So our main character's name is Iris. Iris is about to go on a grand road trip to make sure the loneliest whale in the ocean is finally heard. From fixing the class computer to repairing old radios, 12-year-old Iris is a tech genius, but she is the only deaf person in her school, so people often treat her like she's not very smart. If you ever felt like no one was listening to you, then you know how hard that can be. When she learns about Blue 55, a real whale who's unable to speak to other whales, Iris understands how he must feel. Then she has an idea. She should invent a way to sing to him. But he's 3,000 miles away. How will she play her song for him? Full of heart, this affecting story by sign language interpreter Lynn Kelly shows how a little determination can make big waves. So this book is a realistic fiction with a longing for connection. It's magical, it's hopeful and adventurous. It's very quick moving. It has a suspenseful plot. And it definitely illuminates issues of loneliness, belonging, and power of communication. Our main character is deaf, and this is the last day of National Deaf History Month. I have more information in our show notes, but the point of this celebration is to celebrate the contributions and accomplishments of people who are deaf and those hard of hearing, and raise awareness for the deaf community. Some content warnings are physical abuse, ableism, depression, and bigotry. Please take care of yourself first. And without further ado, let's read the first chapter. Chapter 1. Until last summer, I thought the only thing I had in common with that whale on the beach was a name. I sat with Grandpa after collecting shells and driftwood scattered along the shore and wild flowers from the dunes. The shells and driftwood were for Grandma, and the flowers were for the whale. Grandpa had asked how school was going, and I told him it was the same, which wasn't good. I'd been at that school for 2 years and still felt like the new kid. Grandpa patted the sand next to him. "Did you know she was probably deaf too?" he signed. I didn't have to ask who he meant. The whale had been buried there for 11 years, and my parents had told me enough times about what happened that day. I shook my head. I hadn't known that, and I didn't know why Grandpa was changing the subject. Maybe he didn't know what to tell me anymore about school. The whale had beached herself the same day I was born. When she was spotted in the shallow waters of the Gulf, some people stood on the shore and watched her approach. My grandma ran into the cold February water and tried to push her away from land as if she could make a 40-ton animal change her mind about where she wanted to go. That was really dangerous. Even though the whale was weak by then, one good whack from a tail or a flipper could have knocked Grandma out. I don't know what I would have done, jumped in like she did, or just stood there. She wasn't born deaf like we were, Grandpa continued. The scientists who studied her said it just happened. Maybe she'd been swimming near an explosion from an oil rig or a bomb test. When Grandpa told the story, I saw it as clearly as if it was happening right in front of me. His signing hands showed me the whale in an ocean that suddenly went quiet, swimming over there, over there, over there, trying to find the sounds again. Maybe that was why she'd been there on our Gulf of Mexico beach, instead of in deep ocean waters where she belonged. Whales didn't swim so close to the shore, only her, on that day. A whale can't find its way through a world without sound, Grandpa added. The ocean is dark, and it covers most of the earth, and whales live in all of it. The sounds guide them through that, and they talk to one another across oceans. With the familiar sounds of the ocean gone, the whale was lost in her new silent world. A rescue group came to the beach and tried to save the whale, and they called her Iris. Grandma asked my parents to give the name to me, too, since I entered the world as the whale was leaving it. After the marine biologists learned all they could from her, she was buried right here on the beach, along with the unanswered questions about what had brought her to the shore. We lived on the coast until the summer after second grade, when my family moved to Houston for my dad's new job. Since then, we went back just once or twice a summer. The good thing about our new home was that it was closer to my grandparents. I liked being able to spend more time with them, especially since they were both deaf like me. But we all missed the beach, and I missed being around kids like me. My old school had just a few deaf kids, but that was enough. We had our classes together, and we had one another. But it's different for us, Grandpa signed. Out here, there's more light, and all we need is our own small space to feel at home. Sometimes it takes time to figure things out, but you'll do it. You'll find your way. I wish I'd asked him then how long that would take. Chapter 2. I'd come to the conclusion that sending me to the office was Miss Kahn's only joy in life. That made me responsible for her happiness in a way, but I tried to slip into class without her noticing. I was only a minute late this time, and I had a really good reason. She pointed toward the front office before I could drop into my chair. When I got back to the room with my tardy pass, Miss Kahn said to my interpreter, Mr. Charles, tell Iris to move over next to Nina so she can catch her up. She usually talked around me like that. Mr. Charles had told her so many times that she could just talk to me, and he would interpret the message instead of always saying, tell Iris. Finally, he gave up reminding her she was never going to get it. Also, I didn't need help catching up, and I, for sure, didn't want it from Nina. I'll catch myself up, I sign. When Mr. Charles voiced that for Mrs. Kahn, her face turned even meaner than usual, which I hadn't thought was possible. She didn't say anything else, just jerked a pointer finger to the space next to Nina's desk. The plan made sense to Mrs. Kahn, because she thought Nina was the smartest person in class, and Nina thought she knew sign language. She checked out a library book about it, and that made her an expert. Some people have the kind of confidence that lets them get away with being clueless. Nina signs something to me as I slide my desk over to her territory. I asked Mr. Charles, did she just call herself a giant squirrel? He clamped his lips together and looked away while answering, I think she meant great partner. That was what I'd figured, but trying to make Mr. Charles laugh was one of my favorite things. I leaned over to the next row to look at Clarissa Gold's book. Mr. Charles interpreted my question when I asked Clarissa what we were working on. Nina tried to barge in with her flapping hands and made up sign language. When I ignored her, she got dangerously close to my face, as if I couldn't see her. My eyes stayed on Mr. Charles, since he actually did know what he was doing. Nina's hands were like a swarm of flies I wanted to swat away, so it felt good to flick the wrist of an open hand as if to sign, stop it, to her. After Mr. Charles interpreted that, he added that it might be distracting to have two people signing at the same time. Usually, he didn't jump in like that because he wanted me to take care of things for myself, so Nina must have been annoying him too. After a few minutes, Mrs. Kahn came back to ask Nina, are you doing okay with helping Iris? Yes, I think she's catching on, she answered. Catching on. I looked back down at my work so I wouldn't turn into one of those cartoon characters with steam shooting out of their ears. After I scribbled down the last answer in the workbook, I slammed closed and signed finished. I was about to take out my phone so I could read the new issue of Antique Radio magazine I downloaded that morning. If I opened a book on my desk, I could probably read some of the magazine by looking down at the phone on my lap. While my hand was sliding into my backpack, Miss Kahn said something to me and pointed at her mouth. She'd tried that before, as if that would magically help me understand her. One night, I told my parents, hey, I'm not deaf anymore. Miss Kahn pointed to her lips while she talked, and everything was perfectly clear. Can't believe you didn't think of it. On the first day of school, Miss Kahn tried to hold Mr. Charles' hand still to force me to read her lips instead of watching his signing. I didn't catch what Mr. Charles said to her, but she let go of his hands like she touched a hot stove and didn't try that ever again. We ignored the lip pointing, and Mr. Charles interpreted what Miss Kahn said. I'd have to redo my poetry assignment from last week. That didn't make sense. The poem I turned in was really good. When Miss Kahn returned with my paper, she looked like she'd just bitten into a sour pickle. a normal expression for her, but right then, it looked like she was smelling something really bad at the same time she was biting into that pickle. The red ink was the first thing I noticed when Miss Kahn handed me back my paper. In the margin were the words, "This does not rhyme," which wasn't true. The poem came from a sign language storytelling game I used to do with Grandpa. One of us would start a story, and we'd take turns adding to it, one sign at a time. The trick was our hands had to keep the same shape for the whole story. Like if we started out with a closed fist, every sign for the rest of the story had to be made with a fist too. We'd go on and on like that until we couldn't think of something to add without breaking the hand shape rule. My favorite story started with a tree, full with leaves. A leaf blew away with a gust of wind, then landed in a river, floated down a stream and onto the bank. It ended with a bird swooping in to grab the leaf to add to her nest in another tree. We told that story with our hands open, like the number 5, the whole way through. It didn't look the same on paper. Paper is flat, so I couldn't use all the space above and below and around it that I needed to tell the story right. And the words in English don't have the same shapes as they do in sign language. But here's how it looked when I wrote it down. Leaves waving, blowing, twirling, floating current, land on a riverbank. Mother bird grabs the leaf and builds a new nest. Sure, it didn't rhyme the way English words do, but I thought maybe it would be okay to turn it in if I explained all that. At the top of the paper, I'd written a note about the poem. I wonder if Miss Kahn had even read that part. A red line crossed through the poem, ruining it. I took out my own red pen, glaring at Miss Kahn. Below her, "This doesn't rhyme," message, I wrote, "It does to me." Ever since Grandpa died, I'd wondered if he could still see me, if he was with me in some way. Right then, I hoped more than anything that he was nowhere near me. I didn't want him to see what Mrs. Kahn had done to our story. To us. Everyone turned and looked at me as I crumpled the paper into a ball. Nina held a finger to her lips, as always, like it was her job to remind me that things made noise and that I wasn't supposed to do any of them. But I did not throw the paper at her face. I flung it across the room where it landed in the trash can, followed by the tree and the leaves and the river and the bird with her new nest all slashed to pieces by a red line. Chapter 3. Even though electronics is a sciencey thing, science was the one class where I wasn't reading about it on the sly. Usually I paid attention to what was going on in there because I liked science, and my teacher, Sophia Alamia, I even liked the way her name rolled off my hand like a wave when I spelled it out. Miss Alamila wrote the letters HC on the board. "Remember what this stands for?" she asks. A few hands went up, and Miss Alamila called on me. I spelled out HERTZ, and Mr. Charles voiced Hertz for her in the class. "That's right," said Mrs. Amila. "And what does it measure?" "The frequency of sound." I wondered why Miss Alamila was reviewing frequencies. We'd taken the test on it months ago. "I found something that ties in nicely with what we're studying now," she said, as if she heard me. "It's about a special whale, and you'll see why the frequency of his song is important." Miss Alamila pressed some keys on the computer at her desk, and her eyeglasses reflected the video that played. The projector screen in front of the room showed a big blue square with no signal in one corner. I was heading to Miss Alamila's desk even before she signed, "Please help" to me. After restarting the video and pausing it, I connected the computer to the projector's signal and clicked the CC at the bottom of the screen to turn on the closed captioning. The video started out with a whale swimming in the ocean. Because of the captions, I could read the words on the screen instead of from Mr. Charles' hands. The dark gray-blue body of the whale filled up the screen, his tail waving up and down. The narrator in the video talked about a whale called Blue 55, who swam around by himself and not in a pod like most whales. As far as anyone knew, it had always been that way. He didn't have any friends or family to swim with or talk to. He was a type of baleen whale, the kind that ate plankton and small fish, not the kind with teeth that ate squid and seals. But he was a hybrid. His mother was a blue whale and his father was a fin whale. "The problem," said the narrator, "is that Blue 55's unique voice. Most whales call it at frequencies of 35 hertz and lower, while this lonely whale sounds are at around 55 hertz. Only about 20 hertz off, but it makes a big difference. He was speaking a language that only he knew. Furthermore, his song is a unique pattern. Even if other whales can hear him, they don't understand what he's saying. Blue 55 likely couldn't communicate with his own parents. My stomach tightened into a ball. I wanted another whale on the screen to swim up to Blue 55, or at least look at him. The strange calls of Blue 55 were first detected by naval sonar in the late 1980s. Marine biologists figured out what was making the sounds and why the whale was all alone in the ocean. I didn't notice until the words on screen blurred that my eyes were watery. Mr. Charles handed me a tissue from his pocket. Maybe I'd sniffled or something. Allergies, I signed without looking away from the video. The narrator went on to say that researchers from a marine sanctuary had tried to put a tracker on Blue 55 the year before so they could follow his migration pattern, which was always weird and unlike other whales. They did get a sample of his skin to test. That was how they figured out his parents had been different species. Before they could attach the tracker to him, he dove down and swam away. He wouldn't need to resurface for breath for another 22 minutes. Without a tracker on him, the only way anyone ever knew where he was swimming was from underwater microphones that picked up his song. I didn't remember standing up, but when the video ended and Miss Alamila started talking, I had to look down to see Mr. Charles. Everyone's eyes were on me as I slid back down into my chair. My textbook was on the floor. I must have knocked it off my desk when I stood up. I left it on my feet. "Can you imagine that?" Miss Alamila asked, swimming around for all those years, unable to communicate with anyone. "Yes." She said something else about frequencies, but I wasn't paying attention anymore. I looked through Mr. Charles as if I could still see that whale on the screen. Blue 55 didn't have a pod of friends or a family who spoke his language, but he still sang. He was calling and calling, and no one heard him. Chapter 4. This is a very short chapter. It's only a page, and it will be our last one. He hadn't always swum alone. Long ago, when the loudest sounds in the ocean were the songs of whales, he'd had a pod. Those first whales had tried to talk to him. Every day they worked to change their songs to something like his. He returned their calls, but his sounds meant nothing to them. He heard the other whales, but nothing he sang back made sense. They thought he didn't understand. They communicated to one another past him, through him, across him, like he was a coral reef or kelp forest they passed by, but he heard all of it. He understood them when they despaired, giving up on ever hearing him, and when they lamented he would never be able to contribute to their pod. He couldn't warn them of a coming predator or announce the scent of water were good for feeding. "Yes, I can," he bellowed. "There, waves full of krill." He turned to show them the way. He sang his message, struggling to match the sounds of the whales around him. But the sea grabbed his song and dragged it away, too high for the others to reach. One night, when he awoke to float to the surface for a breath, he found himself alone. After so much time, with so many songs unheard, his family had left him. He called out, "Where are you?" and "What will I do now?" knowing no answer will come, knowing the sounds held meaning only for himself. Oof, that's so sad. And that's the end of the chapter. What do you think will happen next? What do you think will happen with Blue 55, our whale? What do you think will happen with Iris? I hope you found this chapter intriguing enough to check out. If not, there's always another book just waiting to be discovered. You can check this book out as a physical book at our library, as well as a ebook and e-audiobook on Libby. If you need any help with your library card or Libby, let us know. We're always happy to help. I almost forgot. This book that I just read, The Song for a Whale, is also a CCA Battle of the Book for 2024. If you are working through the Battle of the Book, this book is one of them. Please check the show notes for some read-alikes and more information on National Deaf History Month. And thank you for listening. Join me next time for another Next Reads.